world, and welcome to another episode of Terrifying Tales Talk. We are your hosts, Tyler, Sean.
Hello.
Dwayne.
Hey.
And Rachel.
Hello.
I'm going to have to mix that order up every week. I'm going to start with Sean next time. And we're coming to you live from a city with an awkward name that Sean would normally make up, but I don't, that has a reference to a movie no one's seen since 1982.
Yeah, tonight, that sounds about right.
Metropolis seems obvious.
Yeah, we're coming from the home office in Metropolis. Name that state, Metropolis. The kids want us to talk about Cult.
Cult and Cult Divinity Lost and all the stuff in between. That is correct. So, Cult, we should probably say, even though it's obvious on our YouTube channel and our podcasts, viewer discretion is advised for this one. This one may delve into adult topics, we shall see. Possibly the most mature of mature horror games.
Indeed.
So, first let's do a poll. I'm not going to ask Sean because I know the answer. Rachel, experience with Cult in any form? As a player or GM?
You ran it for me that one time. And also, like, as a little bit of a design history nerd, I've looked at the game because even though most people don't know about it, I mean, more people know about it because it's in a new edition. But before that, right. It was sort of a cult role-playing game that was only considered influential because it influenced World of Darkness.
Yes, it did. Dwayne?
So I was privy to playing in a game run by you, and I survived. I think I was the only one that survived.
Oh man, which one did I do for you?
It was myself, Steve, Ever, and I don't remember who the last person was. Maybe it was.
You were in the first one we did on Vorpal Tales, weren't you? You were in the Atrocity Exhibition. Yes. Now I remember. And myself, I actually played Cult 2nd and 3rd edition, but not 1st. When that came out, my parents would never have let me anywhere near that. But I have played it a lot up till now. Can't say which version I love the most, but I love the rules the most in the current version. And Sean, of course, has never played it, which is why we're going to make him ask some questions.
Can I throw something in before?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
So, you know, since we've been running it on our show, I think that it is a perfect time to give a shout out to Helmgast because they have given us a lot of stuff, given us a lot of kudos.
They have. They've not only given us kudos, they're very willing to support people and live shows who play their games. You just got to ask. They've given us free digital products and they let us use their soundtrack in the show without any form of compensation. So, in my experience, most of those Northern European publishers are pretty awesome. Helmgast and Free League and the Modifius people that are out there, they're all really cool. All right, Sean, what do you got?
What is Cult?
We'll see. First, you got to have a despondent attitude about life, and then you have to get taken in by the promise that everything will be awesome if you just come out on the con. Oh, you mean the game. I'm sorry.
Right.
It's that club where people go and they share punch.
No.
that's a different cult. Okay.
Oh man, so many. Oh no, Dwayne, bad Dwayne. Yes. So tell me about the premise of Cult. Like, I remember you telling me this once before, and I was like, nope. So, yeah.
Cult is a contemporary horror role playing game. It is designed to be very mature. It's noted for the philosophy of it, and it goes real deep into religion, especially the dark side of religion, and the content tends to be controversial because it is exceptionally violent, and there are no, well, obviously with your GM's approval and your player's approval, consent always matters most, but the game itself, there are no limits to what you can explore in the themes. Most of the cities too get pretty deep into their concepts. It's heavily based on Clive Barker style fiction and horror, which, like we were talking about with Unknown Armies, which of course means sexuality is dealt with head on in the most uncomfortable ways possible. A lot of body horror, what's the word for that called? Self-modification, when you add things to your body. There's a word for that. I can't remember.
Self-augmentation?
That might be it.
Piercing?
Right, yeah. But basically, piercings and adding things to yourself. It delves a lot with subjective reality. The whole world's a lie, and if we could just free ourselves, we'd see the truth, and that's the core of the game. The dark side of it is, in order to truly free yourself, you must remove every inhibition you have, because the way we're taught to live in modern society is the trap. Those are the chains that shackle you to the prison. When you remove all your limits, then you can see the truth. That's the premise.
Yeah, so
which is why Sean said hell no. Sorry, Rachel.
Yeah.
My answer to Sean's question would be cult is Gnosticism, the role-playing game.
That's a hell of a way to put it.
Yeah, it's on the cover of the most of the books. It's in the front insert of all of them. The Kabbalistic tree, their version of it anyways.
Okay, cool. So I had a question based on something he said. Oh, consent. So like, I know consent's kind of a, I don't want to say new concept, but it's a sort of more in the zeitgeist now than it ever was. How much has the cult game sort of mentioned that and addressed that?
Directly from page one. Because like Rachel said, it is entirely Gnostic. The entire cosmology is the Sephiroth and the Klippoth in opposition. So they break down the trees at the very beginning, and they immediately say, this is very mature topics, because, you know, for those who know, parts of the Gnostic tree of life are the soul and the way you treat other people and your sexuality and good and evil. So it's addressed from page one.
Oh, wow. Cool.
And modern Gnosticism has a lot to do about breaking boundaries, like boundaries that we take for granted. Yep. Like incest.
Yep.
Yeah, so I guess breaking it, taking an even further step back, I don't know if everybody listening to this knows exactly what Gnosticism is, so I imagine they just hit the Wikipedia, but break it down, like, how does it relate?
I'm gonna let Rachel do that.
Yeah, so reality is a lie. Pretty much, if you just read the introduction to cult, you get Gnosticism 101. But essentially, it is that God is a jailer who has decided to imprison humanity for reasons. The reasons are different depending on your favorite Gnostic heresy, and there are a bunch. And so the idea is that as this weak, small-souled human being, you nevertheless have the power to come to an understanding of the divine. And that, like, literally the Gnostics believe, once you come to that understanding, you get magic powers.
And I imagine this relates directly to the game itself.
Yes. Well, the game relates to the Gnosticism is probably a better way to say it. But in the game, to access the magic powers, as it were, you have to transcend your limits. You have to experience atrocity or commit in some form.
Yes, it's removing the veil that has covered your eyes.
Yes.
Interesting.
Which in the stories is only done through misery, basically, or excess, I guess, is a better word than misery. But someone's always miserable in those stories.
So if I ate a lot of candy, like if I ate a lot of sweet tarts.
That's a start.
Oh, okay, cool. All right. But
gluttony is the easy one, though. At the beginning, but it gets harder because Gnostic gluttony involves a lot more than food. You have to go to excess with many things.
I mean, I really like sweet tarts, so.
I mean, if you're doing it right, by the time you're done, you won't.
That's correct.
Yes, this is correct.
Okay, I get it now. All right, that makes a lot. Okay, cool. All right. So what's a typical type of character in this game? Like, what? Like, do you have stats? Do you have,
So cult, you know, uses, so the, okay, the modern.
This is sounding very magey, I will say, and I think there's some connections there.
The modern version of cult uses Apocalypse World System.
Mm-hmm.
The older versions were actually very magey. They were highfalutin concepts. They weren't hard to play. They were a lot like Call of Cthulhu, but it was a lot more complex than it is now. In its modern iteration, only the players roll dice, and your character sheet takes up a half a page. GM rolls no dice. basically the GM says a thing happens, how do you react to it? And that's how the game works. You have archetypes. Your archetype determines your flaws and your feats. And then you decide the modifiers to your passive attributes, which are like saving throws, and your active attributes, which are your abilities. Mm-hmm. That's it. There's no skills. You pick an attribute and use that to roll for any action, skill or otherwise. That's why it's only a half a page sheet. So every character has at least one dark secret, at least two disadvantages assigned to the archetype, at least three advantages, and then three passive attributes, fortitude, reflex, and willpower, 3.5. And then six active attributes, charisma, coolness, intuition, perception, reason, soul, and violence. Actually, I think that's seven. I miscounted. And then whatever action you want to take, you determine with the GM which of those it falls under, and you roll the dice. And there's no rolling for stats. You get a set of numbers to assign to them, some positives, all the way from +3 to -2 for your attributes. And then you can raise that stuff as you level up. Your XP lets you buy new advantages, raise your attributes, and after you get a certain amount of raises with your XP, your template changes to enlightened, and then you can become magical. Hmm. And then there's a whole, and then everything resets, and you get a whole new set of raises. And when those are reached, you're done with the character, whether or not you die. You've passed beyond what it means to be human.
Yes, you have ascended.
Yes. So it is very magey that way. Mm-hmm. The archetypes are all very grounded real world stuff. The academic, the artist, the doll, the broken. You can tell from the names, some of the themes are pretty dark. The criminal, the careerist, the cursed, the deceiver. And they all have like a theme to them that helps set your advantages and disadvantages. And then your advantages and disadvantages are stuff like, so the disadvantage list for the deceiver, you can pick from cursed, greedy, liar, nemesis, sexual neurosis, or wanted. And the advantages for the deceiver are erotic, imposter, seducer, backstab, eye for detail, intuitive, grudge, and manipulative. So they're all themed on what you are. Obviously, the deceiver is like Danny Ocean.
Hmm.
And that's how character creation works. You can do it, and we did it live. I think Dwayne got to experience it live, no one else on this podcast, but it takes like 20 minutes to do all the characters.
Yeah, everything's pretty streamlined as soon as you know what template you want, it has it like these are all the things that you have. Choose one, choose two, choose three.
Yep. They haven't released rules yet for Magic, but they just finished a new Kickstarter and the books are coming out this year. As soon as they do, we're going to play it on the show again. They're going to start delving into that and those, and then their next third Kickstarter will delve deeply into the Magic. But in the old versions of the game, once you reached a certain level of ascension, as it were, you could start learning spells, but they're not spells like in most games. They're rituals, or through experiencing something terrible or dark, you're able to unlock this power that works X amount of times, and then you pay for them in health and sanity, basically. Or favors to dark entities.
Nobody's out there throwing around fireballs or anything crazy like that.
Yeah, no. The spheres of magic are like madness and passion and... Well, I can't remember what the other ones are. There's five of them. But there's no elemental sphere in this game. Necromancy's one. And two others I can't think of.
I want to be a necromancer when we play again. We
can make that happen.
Nice.
What other questions do you have?
So you said there was cults and then cult divinity lost. Is there a difference or there's different versions? How's that work? Versions?
Yeah, the original version of cult was in...
91.
Yeah. 91. Second edition was some point in the mid 90s. Dwayne might have the year. And then.
Yeah. I only know the five.
I don't remember the second. Second edition is the one I started in. So I was a teenager, but I don't remember what year. And then third edition was in the aughts. And fourth edition is Divinity Lost. Third edition was in 01. They were based heavily at the time on the Hellraiser phenomena in 91. It's very much those themes, and the main antagonists of the Hell Domain are Cenobites, not called that. They're called, help me out, Dwayne. I've made you fight them so many times.
Rachel should
know, because Sunday game.
Necrotides?
Purgatides.
Purgatides.
Yes.
Necrotides.
I mean, that also sounds like a pretty horrific monster to fight.
It does, yes. I agree.
I picture
God
just like,
damn it, Dwayne, stop giving Tyler ideas.
Like just a tsunami,
an undead of, water elemental.
No, yeah, I was thinking like a tsunami of like bones and yeah. Like old fleshy bits. Just
it's sentient blood, obviously.
Oh,
it's a tide of sentient blood that sucks your life essence out. You're right, Rachel. Dwayne just gave me an idea.
See, I'm probably not helping myself, but what I would do is, you know how when they embalm you, they take all your fluids out?
Oh, yes.
Ooh. There are a lot of murder victims in this setting who have their blood drained out that collects in sinks and sewers and nice places like those.
That I like this.
Fantastic idea. Yep, doing that now.
Yeah, so how does the typical like story go? Like typical adventure? What's
it's definitely not an adventure.
For lack of a better term, like what typically happens?
Most of the time your characters start out living their life. So basically the way it works is your character has a certain level of the lie that they've seen through. Every one of them, in order to be a cult character, has experienced something that lets them know there's more out there, something traumatic and horrific. They might have died and seen the other side. They might have, because in the world of cult, like solving a puzzle box will open the doors to hell. Sometimes literally opening a door will take you to another world, you know. So like you can trip over it in this world accidentally if you're the downtrodden. So you start out with those characters living their life, and then somehow they trip over the supernatural, and then it's a lot of running and screaming and trying not to die. Mystery oriented, a lot like Tales from the Loop, though, where you're solving some kind of mystery to endure.
Okay, so they come to the game just slightly enhanced, and then something like just tips them over the edge, and just all hell breaks loose, basically. So, like, correct. Like a typical Hellraiser movie, more or less.
When I was gonna say, like, college for me, at least.
It depends there's a lot of things you can do with it too, like. The first one I did on the show was they all got invited to an art gala, and the artist was able to draw the supernatural because he'd seen it. And he died, and this was the first time they were showing off all of his exhibitions all at once, all in the same place. And no one knew that his lover had contacted him using necromancy, and he's basically going to feed off all the participants' life forces to draw himself back to the real world. So that was the first one. The one I did with Rachel was, you're all running from a crime scene, whatever happened went wrong, you all are blaming each other for it, and then your car wrecks in the middle of nowhere, and a monster starts chasing you through the woods. Chase them right into the house of the hillbillies from hell. And I don't mean that term as a harmful stereotype. I mean, they literally were supposed to be the hillbilly, like the, that was the name of the family from Chainsaw Massacre.
Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, it was that family, right? And then they had to survive that. And then the monster showed up and killed everyone. And then by the end, only Steve and Eric had survived. And as they're driving away, they kill each other simultaneously for the prize that was what they stole in the first place. The car wrecks again, and then Eric wakes up to a Purgatide telling him, this is your nightmare, this is your hell, because you caused all this to happen. And he wakes up in the car with everyone in it and has to relive that night over and over again for eternity.
Oh, good times.
So yeah, you can do a lot of things with it.
Okay, wow. Cool. I think I'm out of questions for that, because I'm still in a note for playing that game though.
Well, I'll jump on the back of like what the adventures can be like, and really they can be just about anything. I've looked around on the internet a couple times when we first got into playing Cult Divinity Lost, and I was looking to see like what type of ideas people were having, and it goes everywhere from abandoned hospitals to, you know, the cosmic horror stories, which I thought was interesting because we always talk about mythos a lot of times between myself and Tyler. And the strange difference between a cosmic horror story and cult is, you know, in cult there's a chance of escaping, in mythos there's really not, like you're all, you know, there's always that inevitability, because in cult you can regain your divinity and become stronger. But at the same time, in mythos, the horrible universe is kind of indifferent to you, but in Cult, everything's trying to kill you. Everything hates you.
Yeah, the premise is humans were gods once, and we had an immortal city called Metropolis. But for some reason that no one knows, probably because we did something terrible, we pissed off God, and God was like, nope. And he invaded Metropolis with his angels and then trapped us in an illusion wrapped up by our own senses of reality and enforced complex morals on us to make us not notice what's actually going on around us. And then God disappeared, leaving a giant rift into oblivion in the middle of the city of Metropolis. And the angels start warring with each other. One gets killed. And all of the dark aspects of the angels, the devils, basically are like, it's our time to shine. And that's the world of Cult.
Damn.
Nobody's on your side. The angels are just as bad as the devils, just in different ways. They're there to keep you prisoner. They're there to whip you with the yokes of Catholic morals, whereas the devils are there to tempt you to breaking those morals just so they can whip you with barbed whips for eternity for fun. There's no way out. It's no happy ending. Death is only the beginning. It had a lot of controversy too when it first came out, because Sweden didn't really have its satanic panic until the 90s. We had it in the 80s. And that's when this game came out. And back then in Sweden, RPGs were sold in toy stores.
Mm.
You know where this is going.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. In 97, the core rules of Cult were actually discussed by Sweden's parliament. And laws were put forth to stop, to spend taxpayer money to stop this game. And it was for the same reason the satanic panic happened. There was a 15-year-old in a small town who killed his teenage friends because they were playing Cult, and they said that, you know, he got possessed by the devil and killed his friends, just like here, when in reality, he had a mental illness that nobody was taking care of, and they were ignoring him.
It's funny how
the
that...
exact same thing, yeah, just across the pond.
Wow. It's almost like if we paid attention to mental health as a thing.
It's almost like the 90s weren't good at that.
I mean, I can't think of anything currently or past where, like, there might be a documentary about somebody and there being mental health problems or just abuse. And I can't think of anything that's related. No, the 90s was great, just like the 80s. Everything's fine.
No. It is a game, on a more serious note, that does attract people who, you know, it's a game that appeals to people who have the mindsets that make you think enjoying this sort of role-playing game would be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I myself have, like, chronic depression, and I can see those themes in the game, and I can see why that kind of darkness calls to me. It is definitely a thing, but this game isn't making people kill each other, no. It's just a game.
Yeah, I think that's a problem with most things, is we see a reaction to a thing when that thing is merely, it's kind of like supplanting therapy almost, but there's no one there to really like manage that therapy. So people can just fall off the edge pretty easily if we were just a society that sort of thought therapy was a good thing, and, you know, people would be able to, they could play their games without going off the edge, you know, that.
Yeah. If a parent doesn't want their child playing Cult and they discover their child is playing Cult, instead of asking why they're playing, well, instead of asking what the game's doing to them, they should ask, why is the kid interested in the game?
Yeah, that's...
What are you going to say, Rachel?
I do sort of want to disagree a little bit with it's just a game, in part because of what Sean said, in which, like, I have seen people try and use RPGs as therapy, and I've seen it go really, really wrong because amateur DIY therapy obviously doesn't work out that well.
Yeah, I find it very interesting, a lot of people, because I've never used role-playing games to sort of figure myself out. That's kind of a new concept that I'm experiencing with players now. And like, for me, it is just a game, but for others, it's like they're trying to figure out who they are and what their identity is. And it's good to a point, and it's a good way to express and sort of experiment. But
sure. Like, I have a friend who has a therapist for his RPG characters, And which I know it sounds weird, but it helps him a lot.
No, I think that's cool. I think it would be a good thing if people went to a therapist and said, I was in a game and did this, and this is how I felt, and this is, you know, where I got, and this is what I was thinking. And I think it's because, you know, most people don't have, they don't have the tools, or they don't have the concepts to understand like what they're feeling. And being in a game, I think, allows them to sort of branch out and experiment and like, I'm going to do this and see the reaction. Oh, that got that reaction. Okay, now I can go to my therapist and talk about that sort of thing. So I think, yeah, I'm down for it being a tool, just as long as there's, you know, some rails or there's some controls or somebody's there to sort of help guide you through it.
Yeah. I absolutely think that cult in the hands of like a trained and astute therapist could really help people sort of deal with and process their shadow.
And yeah, like I would agree too with your point that we're a bunch of mid-20s to early 40-year-olds who are able to create a safe environment to explore themes like this, but maybe a bunch of 15-year-olds doing it is not such a great idea. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Especially 15-year-olds that are going through things nobody's paying attention to.
Yeah, I feel like it's one of those things where like you can use D&D to sort of teach math, and you can just sort of hitch on that same concept of you can use games like Cult to sort of teach life in a way and how to handle only life situations.
At a certain maturity level, I would say, yes.
Yeah. Right. Like, yeah. Yeah. I mean, Cult, you're kind of on a certain spectrum, but I think with most games, there's a certain sort of level of sort of teaching element to sort of figure out life. And I think a lot of people don't deal with the darker aspects of their personality and character. And I think it's okay to kind of dive into that weird Hellraiser sort of stuff just to see how much it freaks you out or how much you like it and just what that actually means. That's knowing your limits and knowing where it's taking you. And I think that's kind of the first step to figuring yourself out.
I agree. That whole "He who stares into the abyss better beware the abyss staring back" might be true to some extent. But if mm-hmm. you don't explore the dark side of yourself, how are you going to know when it's taking over, when it's in control?
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
Wow.
Agree.
What you got, Duane?
You guys always have awesome answers, and I'm sitting over here shaking my head going, mm-hmm, yeah. No, that's if I could have allocated those words better, then I would have, but I can't, so I just shake my head.
I think
I do agree with the yes, in the correct hands, this would be an awesome tool. And I you know, I also agree with Tyler saying that, you know, you definitely have to have some level of maturity to take on this game. It is definitely a game that makes you use your noodle in ways that you might not have thought that you needed to use it. And
yeah.
And to explore, even for someone who's you know, not using it as a tool to express themselves, but just like, wow, it's something that someone can use to better understand what others may use it for, or what, you know, other demons that people have, you know, better understand what someone might be going through who has a skeleton in the closet.
Yep, I agree. Jumping back to mechanics, though, I found the thing I didn't have before. The magic is death, dream, madness, passion, time, and space. Those are the five. No fireballs, Sean.
Okay, I don't know. I mean,
conflicted between being a necromancer and being an evil Doctor Who.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I'm the guy who plays mage and is like, doesn't care about the paradoxes of time spheres. So it's like, time and space. Okay, sure.
The other catch with Cult is it's much more because the themes of cult are quasi-religious. So is the magic. The casting times for cult spells, which I don't reflect in our crossover game, Mage Cult, can take up to several days, and they can only be done in a specially prepared temple. Basically, Rachel, you need a blasphemy altar like a setite, and they are highly specific and exacting. It is a lot like thaumaturgy from Vampire, only slower.
So what you're saying is Sophie needs to start building a blasphemy altar in the attic?
That part I am keeping, yes. I'm not going to make the days long spell casting times because we're combining it with Mage Ascension, but I am going to make you create a temple to madness in your case.
I'm going to have to break a lot of mirrors.
So since we were talking about mechanics, what type of game is this? What are we rolling?
Oh, this game uses tens. Your target number you're looking for is 15 or greater to always be awesome.
Wait, I thought it was lower.
Lower, not higher. You're right. Yes, sorry. No, it is greater. What am I talking about? No, this is a game that rolls over. Modifius games roll under. Helmgast rolls over. So you get two die to roll, and you get modifiers or penalties depending on your attributes. And then 15 and up is always perfect. 10 to 14 is you succeed, but there's a complication, which is where you live in the game. That's what usually happens. And then 9 or lower is a failure. You rarely get complete successes because there's always complications. Plus, you know, the average roll of 2d10 is a 10. So that is the core, and that is the entirety of the mechanic. It's very simple. Roll two dice, add your modifiers, subtract your penalties, and list result. And then there's a set number of things you can do as the player. There's like X number of moves a player can make, and the book outlines, depending on where you roll within the framework, the result you would get.
And now I want to pull up my old character sheet.
You can even get the custom dice still. They have Sephiroth dice, which actually look pretty cool.
I want Sephiroth dice.
You can still get them. They're not even that much. Get them from Helmgast or Modifius on their websites. I think Amazon might even have them.
I'm always down for a game that has its own like special dice set. Like,
yeah, and they're not gimmick dice either. They're just specialized D10s with special markings on them. So like, here's an example, Duane.
Yeah, I pulled up my old sheet.
Oh, you got it?
Yeah.
You should read us one then, so you can talk some more.
Yes, so I was, in our game, I was the scientist. And one of my advantages. I don't remember if I had this, but this is one that the scientist can have. It is enhanced awareness. If I focus on a location where the illusion is weak, I roll soul, and on a success, I have visions about the place and may be able to speak with entities tied to it. And then it breaks down what you're able to get based on your roll. So if I rolled a 9 or less, the illusion tears, the veil is temporarily lifted, revealing the alternate dimension. I go crazy. I could be sucked in. Something may come through. It's up to the GM what happens from there. 10 to 14. You get a basic impression, and then a 15 or higher, I am able to discern clear details regarding the location.
Yep. And then living or dying is tracked, much like Call of Cthulhu, with stability. They're trying to get away from, you know, madness and insanity. Those terms are, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is.
Negative?
Yeah, they have negative connotations. They put a negative connotation on a thing that doesn't necessarily need to be negative. So they try, like many games in this genre, they're trying to change the words. So they have chosen stability. And then health. For health, you can take X number of wounds before it becomes a major wound. And you can only have very few major wounds before you die. And it takes a long time to heal. So there aren't actually hit points. There's how much hits you can take before you have to fall over and die. Regular wounds can go away faster because that could be just representing, you know, slamming your hand in the car door as opposed to getting your hand cut off, which would be a major wound. And then stability has a variety of different levels from composed all the way down to broken.
It's five different levels.
Yep.
A couple of tiers, or actually I should say it's five tiers and a couple of different levels within those tiers.
And it is a very short list of moves. Like, if it wasn't for the themes, you'd love running this game, Sean, because you never roll dice. And the players can choose from avoiding harm, enduring injury, keeping it together, acting under pressure, engaging in combat, influencing others, reading a person, observing a situation, investigate, help and hinder, and see through the illusion. That's it. That's what you can do. That's the entirety of the game. Like, weapons and equipment don't really cause damage. They give you effects you can create with them, and they can also add bonuses or penalties to your violence roll. So they don't like increase or decrease damage, they increase or decrease success, and they also have different things they cause to the player, like knockdown or cut, slice, stab, you know.
Yes, very, very easy on the GM.
Yeah.
Oh, you shoot the bad guy. Okay, he takes damage. How much damage? We don't know.
Yep, and the supernatural creatures, as listed, don't even really have stats in the way that people are used to stats. They're just a list of moves they would you can use against the players, and a suggestion on what it would take to defeat them. That's it. Rest is up to you. It makes on-the-fly creature creation very simple once you understand the different kinds of moves you can do. What else you got, Rachel?
Oh, you know, as I think about this game, I'm sort of imagining what its opposite would be like. And I'm thinking about the culture of toxic positivity.
Yeah.
I feel a lot more comfortable with cult than I do with toxic positivity. At least this game's honest.
Yeah, this game is honest about human nature, that's for sure. They actually have, I looked it up for you, Sean, from your earlier question, a whole section about creating the horror contract. It says, ask every player to write a list of things they do not want to experience. Don't discuss this verbally and just have them hand it in even anonymously is probably a good idea. But tell the group as a whole the forbidden topics and make sure you stick to it. And then it says, if it comes up, pull that person aside after the game and say, don't do that next time. Mm. Make sure you have a special word or sign players can use to stop the scene. And two choices therein. Ask them if they want to fade to black or simply end that scene and move to the next one. Or, you know, also, do we need to take a 20-minute break? it also recommends, to make it more real, to have each player tell the GM about a thing that frightens them that they would actually be okay with you putting in the story and then use it. Note it says frightens, so you couldn't say clowns for Sean. He isn't scared of clowns. They're just dumb. But you could use spiders for Steve.
Mm. Cool. That's yeah, that's very much like our consent forms that we're doing.
Very much. I actually think, if I remember correctly, the person that our forms are based on helped write this book. I'm checking on that.
Okay, that makes sense.
I'm gonna double check that since I said it though to make sure we're right. Yep, name is in the credits.
Dope. Very cool.
What else you got, Duane?
I think that's about it.
As far as how we use this game. My Mage Chronicle, played in seasons. We're about to wrap up season one as a crossover between Mage of the Ascension and Cult. A lot of people have asked, isn't that just what Mage of the Awakening is? Mage of the Awakening does have some cult themes. It's definitely not a crossover. The cosmology does not work the way Cults does, and it's not Gnostic. It's closer than Mage of the Ascension, though, and Mage of the Awakening's conceit is that the world is, in fact, a lie. And there are entities that used to be human of supernatural power that keep it that way. And Awakening lets you see through it, and that's why you could do the magics. But in our game, it's full cult mixed in. We're using the entire cult cosmology with the Mage of the Ascension rules, fighting twisted. Basically, what would happen if you went too far in seeing the truth? You become the supervillains of the game. They killed one last week, and Rachel could tell you how that went.
Ooh.
Well, she's dead, but I don't think that stops our problems. I think we just created more problems for ourselves. But I've got Sphere of Madness.
It's correct. Also, we play some form of cult every year in the spooky season, and that's going to be the case this year on Sundays.
Nice.
And who knows? With almost two shows a day, you'll probably see it some more, too. Also, like I said, they just kickstarted the second wave of things for it, including entire new campaign modules and stories and GM supplements and ideas on how to run the game, including more beautiful artwork in the form of maps and handouts, which is a new thing for Cult. All of their art.
The art is so gorgeous.
It's funny to say that with Cult art. Beautiful. Exactly. It is gorgeous, but it is intense.
Yes, very. But yes, it is. That's kind of extreme. I was going to say it's kind of like how everyone stares at a bus crash.
No, I think you're down the right street on that statement. I think
missed your bus stop by a couple stops, but you're on the right street. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's beautiful in its creepiness.
Yes.
It's kind of
beautifully
like,
creepy. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I looked at it and was like, this is cool, but this is creepy as fuck. So, yeah, I'm good.
That's another theme I've noticed. All those Northern European publishers, all their books are so pretty. I haven't seen one that isn't yet.
Yeah, they do take a lot of time with, like, sort of laying out. They take the books, and you can definitely tell there's very much design aesthetic to those books. They're very well laid out. They're very well like crafted. Like stuff doesn't hang off in a weird, like they take the time, because sometimes you read some game books and like there's just text that randomly goes places and things. Yeah, there's a lot of thought put into those books. They're goddamn works of art.
Oh yeah, a lot of times on the Kickstarters, that's like the last thing that they're waiting on.
Yeah,
they'll have the whole book ready to go, and they're like, "Well, you know, we wanted to get these last couple pictures," and you're like, "All right, I'll wait."
That actually cool. happened with the last Cult Kickstarter. Yes, it was because of art. Any last thoughts from Rachel or Duane?
Play it. Can't wait to play again.
Yeah, play it. Give it a try. I wish that I could run this, but I don't have the capability.
I'm not sure what you mean. Elaborate.
That
might be something interesting to listeners too.
So I like the concept, and I loved playing it, and you know, we especially, you know, being a fan of Hellraiser and all movies like such,
right?
Like I would love to run something like that, but I don't think I could ever. I think my mind is too closed. Not that I'm afraid to open it, but like I would want to, but I would probably sit there ready to write a scene for it or some type of arc, and I'd be like, I don't know what I'm doing.
I think that came up in a previous session. We were talking specifically about that, and I know Rachel and I have talked about that, where as a GM for games like these, you are definitely exposing yourself to certain levels of yourself to give your players a good time, and sometimes you need to take a shower when you're done. Did I really just do that? Yeah.
Yeah, I know that's why I don't run a lot of super deep emotional horror-based games, because just like I know at a certain point I just don't have an off switch, so I'm just gonna put you through hell. So
yeah, and more importantly, you gotta know and have a good way to clear yourself of it when you're done, so it doesn't bleed over into your regular life.
Yeah, I think that goes back to I eat a lot of sweet tarts.
I mean, as a LARPer, we've been coming up with a lot of ways and having conversations about bleed is what we call it, and it's exactly that experience where like the game follows you home in ways sometimes you want to, sometimes you don't, but yeah. Look up LARP techniques to manage bleed. They're all really helpful.
And I think that's good final advice for this episode. So we are going to leave you to our spooky outro fans, but don't worry, we'll be back next week with a new topic. I'm not sure if they're released in order. It'll be Simba Room, Dark Fantasy. That's going to be awesome. But until then, I'm going to leave Duane with a last thought. Hey, Duane.
Yeah.
Here comes Sean. You ready?
Oh, fuck. I forgot about these.
Hey, Duane, yesterday I met a scary sausage salesman. It was a worst case scenario.
So awful.
Good night, everyone.